Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Michael Liebernecht on why he planted the Dwelling Church in Carson City.
Carson City is a very under-churched city. In fact, Northern Nevada overall is a under-churched area, and maybe even more of a startling statistic is that it's one of the top de-churched areas in the country, which basically means that people who have some faith background or have a history with the church maybe aren't anymore, and maybe don't practice their faith, especially in the context of a church community.
Michael Liebernecht, next. Coming up next, we'll find out about the important, challenging, and exciting work of church planting. In a nutshell, planting a church is to start a new local church from the ground up. Sean Kohler is with Pastor Michael Liebernecht to find out about how he's gone about planting the Dwelling Church in Carson City.
Michael, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and the Dwelling Church?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I am married to my wife, Denise. We've been married for coming up on 17 years. Got two kids, and we were originally from San Diego, California. Came to Northern Nevada in 2014 and was doing some youth ministry up in Reno. And we both actually were in youth ministry together. That's how we met, and came to this area specifically to do high school ministry. And a few years ago, we planted the Dwelling Church down here in Carson City. Yeah, the Dwelling, we meet over at the Boys and Girls Club off Russell. And so we are a pop-up church, portable church, whatever you want to call it there. And so that just basically means we don't have our own facility to call our own right now. And we do the pop-up church set up, tear down every single weekend. And it's been pretty cool. It's been good to be in the community. And the Dwelling is a non-denominational church planted from Hope Community Church in South Reno, was our sending church. And so we felt like it was God leading us to start a church down here in Carson City.
Great. Yeah. Tell us about the area. Why Carson City? What brought you here?
Yeah. My wife and I, when we moved to Northern Nevada from San Diego, everybody always asks us, you know, like, how could you leave San Diego? You know, and for us, it wasn't a hard answer. It was just, we fell in love with the area. We fell in love with the people, and we could see ourselves, you know, building our lives here, building our family here. And we grasped the vision for that. And so for us, it was kind of a no-brainer of just having this resolve to be in Northern Nevada. We didn't see ourselves going anywhere else. And so when we started to think about and pray about starting the church, it was kind of just already a done deal that wouldn't be anywhere else but Northern Nevada. Yeah, so we realized, you know, we had this resolve that we would be in Northern Nevada, wherever that meant. And we didn't see ourselves going anywhere else. And also on top of that, we both agreed that we felt the conviction that we wanted to do this with the partnership of Hope Community Church as kind of our sending church. And so we felt like that was an effective, healthy decision to do that. And so as we were talking through it, we just recognized that Carson City was a city that needed more churches. Not that there aren't good churches here. What's been really cool is I've been able to get to know a lot of the pastors in the area just over the last couple of years and develop some really good relationships there with a core group of them who are just hungry to see God move, you know, and hungry to see God do great things here in this city and the surrounding areas. And we just wanted to be another part of that. And yet, at the same time, Carson City is a very under-churched city. In fact, Northern Nevada overall is a under-churched area. And maybe even more of a startling statistic is that it's one of the top de-churched areas in the country, which basically means that people who have some faith background or have a history with the church maybe aren't anymore, and maybe don't practice their faith, especially in the context of a church community anymore. And so for me, it was like, okay, we need more healthy, effective churches that are actually sharing the gospel and actually discipling people. Not that we have it all figured out. We're not coming in, you know, trying to just pave the way, thinking that our model and strategy is the answer to every, you know, question or issue or problem or challenge. And, but at the same time, definitely have that resolve that what we're going for and what God has called us to do is honoring to Him and something that I think will resonate in this area.
Why do you think Nevada is so unchurched or dechurched?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think you probably have to go back, you know, decades and decades of history to really know the answer to that. Nevada in general is just hard soil, literally and figuratively. You know, you think about that parable, you know, of the seed on the path and the seed in the soil and whatnot. And I think this area in particular just kind of, I'll speak specifically to Carson City. I think maybe there's just this reality that their experience with churches, it's a smaller area, you know, so everybody knows everybody. And if one little thing happens, you know, everybody knows about it type of thing. And so I don't know the specific answer to that on across the board. I just know that people do need Jesus. And for the churches that are here that are doing great work, you know, they're steadfast and just continuing to preach the gospel anew and meet people where they're at, help people see that there's more than meets the eye, that there's something bigger than just what's right in front of them. And I think sometimes people can get stuck in that of just, you know, sticking to themselves, putting their head down and just going, you know.
Yeah.
I do know that this is an area that definitely deals with a lot of mental health issues and addiction issues. And so there could be some of that that plays into that that reality.
Yeah, I'm personally wonder if the legalized prostitution and gambling and everything has something to do with that, which is interesting. I've seen a lot of people stay away from Nevada for those reasons. And it's like, Well, that's the reason that needs to be here more.
Sure. That's a good point. You know, and as I was going through the church planning process, you know, and just the boot camps and working with our project manager about just really coming to a conclusion of like, what is a strategy we're really using, you know, and how are we really going to go about this that makes sense? And, you know, he said that, yeah, a lot of people aren't looking to church plant in Nevada, you know. Of course, you know, Vegas and this area, you're just not seeing church plants coming in droves. You know, it's not what we used to call the Bible Belt, right? It's not that dynamic. And so I definitely agree. I think that plays a factor into it. Whether it's accurate or not is a different discussion. Because of course, anybody who's grown up in, I think, Northern Nevada long enough would see just how great of a community this is, how much people just really care about family and, you know, working hard and making an honest living and in that regard. But I think it's true. Yeah, I think people don't maybe have an accurate perspective on Nevada because of some of those bigger hot topic issues, which are there. They're obviously a reality still. Gambling is, yeah, it's a reality, and prostitution is a reality, but it's not the precedent. I don't think it's the main thing, certainly up here. So yeah, I think in those regards, it's just, you're not seeing people when they're going through their master plan of church planning, whether they're part of an organization that's based out of a different state, you know, they're not looking at this area like, oh, that's a great looking area. That's a very attractive area to go plant a church. You know, they might be thinking elsewhere. But for us, you know, it wasn't a deterrent. One, because we already lived here and we understood the culture and the people. Now, Carson City is very different than even Reno. And I think a lot of people know that, again, if they've lived here. But even then, it's just for us, having that resolve of knowing that this is where God has planted us and we want to plant a church and deepen a church, with roots here that is here for this community and is in the community and really, wanting to just love and serve people well and see God move.
If you could go real quick and explain, to somebody who's listening, who doesn't even know anything about church planting or anything like that, what is a church plant and why is planting churches so important?
Yeah, so a church plant is just this idea that it's a new church starting from essentially nothing. You know, it's raising up people to maybe relocate or go to a new area to start a church from the ground up. And this happens a lot of different ways. You know, there's not one strategic way that church plants can happen. You know, there's you know, there's several different methods and strategies and approaches to this, but it's essentially the same thing, right? It's a church from nothing. It's a church from the ground up. You know, I think the reason why church planting resonated with me and I was feeling the call to do this is because there is just something that resonates inside of me about creating something new and developing something new and afresh, you know, because we're all human and we all get into this, sometimes this rut of just sticking to what we know, right? And getting into routines and habits that are hard to break out of. And so I think something like a church plant just gives you opportunity to break new ground and think about fresh ways and strategies to meet and reach new people. And it gives you the opportunity to really build, hopefully, healthy ministries and healthy communities within that church. You know, I think Tim Keller said something a while back that really resonated with me. He said, a vigorous and continuous approach to church planting is the only way to guarantee an increase in the number of believers and is one of the best ways to renew the whole body of Christ. Mm. And that really resonated with me as I was going through that process because, again, renewal is part of the fabric of the scriptures and the narrative of the scriptures, right? Is that God is in the business of bringing redemption and renewal to all things living, right? Whether that's people or communities, you know, the whole creation, right? And so part of it is God bringing us into that mix and being a part of that plan to bring renewal.
So what was the process, at least for the dwelling and getting started, planting from Hope Church in Reno to mm-hmm. Carson City?
Well, I think it's important to say for me personally, you know, I had been starting to think about and pray about and getting the sense of church planting years before this even started to take shape. So for me, the process was a lot longer. But actually tangibly taking action steps was back in 2020, 2019, before we were even on staff at Hope Community Church, we had had some initial conversations with the pastor there, Pastor Bill, about what that might look like. For a lot of reasons, that kind of got put on pause. And then about 2021, 22 was when that really started to amp up. And basically, to make a long story short, it was just a series of conversations with Bill and the elder team there and praying through that season of just what church planting would look like. Because Hope Community Church is a church planting church. You know, their heart is to plant more churches, as is ours. And so they wanted to plant another church in the area and had been starting to make moves to do that. And a series of events just kind of led it to be a conversation with us as possibly the people to do that. And so once we got on board, you know, you could just say at that point, all right, go do it. You know, you could just go and start talking to people and pray and maybe start meeting with people and then and plant a church. For us, it was more strategic than that. You know, we brought on a project manager, organization called Passion for Planting, who does just great work, especially in the area of project management. You know, for me, not ever doing this, you don't know what you don't know, right? And so this company was fantastic to help think through all of the process of the ins and outs. They have like a 400-point checklist.
Very detailed.
Yeah. And I would say probably 250 of those things on that checklist I would have not known to do if I had just gone out on my own. You know, so that tells you a little bit something about the robustness of their process. But they were just fantastic to work with, supportive, helped me think through all the details. I'm not a super detailed person, so that was huge for me. My wife is a detailed person, so that was also huge for her because she saw that and be like, oh, wow, this is in depth.
I got a checklist to
work
through.
Yeah, she's like, all right, this is syncing up, yeah. And she appreciated that about him. So through that process, we went to a church plant, kind of a boot camp, kind of like a process where you go and get interviewed and screened and kind of get the approval, so to speak, kind of like you're getting greenlit to do it, you know, and we got that from a company or an organization, a church actually, like a church or a network, and that was great. And so that was kind of the official, like, okay, here we go, you know. And so we came back and we met with the board of Hope we put a plan together and, you know, presented it to them and they approved it. And so January 1 of 2024, we hit the ground running. And from there, it was a lot more exciting. You know, we got to really start to talk to people and put a launch team together and, of course, a fundraising support team and just really having to get people on board to buy into what we're doing, you know, whether that was serving on our launch team or supporting it financially, those types of things. And so it's an arduous process. You know, we're talking probably 9-10 months before we even launched. And maybe sometimes people don't really think about how much goes into that.
You kind of talked about the excitement of, you know, hitting the ground running and going. What was that season of waiting like before that?
Before we started doing it?
Yeah, when you had to, as you were talking about, there's, you know, there's the exciting moment where you're like, go. But before that, you're sort of in this pattern, this holding pattern.
Yeah.
How do you navigate that?
I call it the incubation stage. Yeah. And I guess there's, you know, there's the pre stage, which was, you know, just letting the dream and the vision simmer and praying on it and just allowing God to work on me. I think that's one of the most important things is two things. One, you don't church plant just because you think it's a good idea. You know, I mean, I always agree that church planting is always a good idea, but it's not just a flippant thing that you say, yeah, I think I'm going to do this today because it sounds like a good idea.
It's not for everyone.
No,
yeah,
it is not. And, you know, if that's your posture and mentality going into it, you're going to be set up for rude awakening because it's not an easy process. It's daunting. There's a lot of sleepless nights, you know, especially if your family's involved. I think that's been one of the biggest challenges and pieces for me to just figure out how to navigate. And I've really needed to rely on God and the Spirit through a lot of that because you're not just planting for yourself. You're planting with your family and they have to be on board as well. And they're never going to be on board as much as you're on board, you know, as the person doing it. That's just always going to be a reality, but you absolutely do have to have your spouse's support and your kids, of course, depending on that changes with age. You know, if you're planting with teenagers, you might involve them a little bit more in the conversation, even if it's still your decision. But if they're two, they're along for the ride.
Yeah, no one's asking the toddler's opinion in that.
No, they're going to just ask if there's snacks. That's really all they care about. So I think that's important. And so at the incubation stage, you know, was just, okay, praying on this, how would this look, you know, where, you know, who, wrestling through my own insecurities, you know, as a person. I think that's something that you always have to get over. You know, if Moses had to wrestle through his own insecurities, you know, that's pretty understandable. And then when we were actually in the process, you know, of the pre-launch phase, it's just having a lot of conversations and making sure that in the process you are making enough time for your family, you know, having check-ins, having conversations. How are they feeling about this? You know, what are your thoughts? And I'm not saying I did it perfectly, right? Or got an A+ on that, you know, on that test, but I think that is absolutely crucial.
So, in talking about, you know, having those conversations with your family, sort of brings me to what kind of challenges did you face during the season of planting?
Man, yeah, a lot. I mean, a lot. I think in the pre-launch phase, basically we're talking January 24 to October of 24, which was the, you know, gearing up for it. You're on an island kind of because you're not, you know, initially part of a congregation and community at that time because you're doing so much to prepare and plan for the new community. Mm-hmm. So I think for a season, you know, you can never underestimate the reality of loneliness in ministry as pastors. And I think it's a real issue across the country with a lot of pastors. And when you're church planting, it's kind of almost exacerbated because you're in this kind of in between. Right? You haven't launched with your community yet, but you're not a part of the other community before because you're just doing so much to gear up for that. And so I think that was a big issue. I'm a people person. Mm-hmm. I'm an extrovert. I thrive on collaboration and being around people. And there wasn't a lot of that in a consistent sense. So that was hard for me. And even as we launched, you know, you're just kind of flying solo in a lot of ways and having to wear a lot of hats, which is part of it. I think the other challenge is going back to the family piece, is knowing how much to include them in and how much to not include them in, you know, just finding that, that nice, medium, happy medium of, you know, how much information and data am I, you know, giving to my wife so she's in the know, but also how much to buffer and protect her so she doesn't, you know, feel like she's carrying too much of that burden, especially our kids too, you know. I think pastors' kids always have this just default of they're going to know a little bit more than most kids because they're there and they're in it. But also how much do you protect them from that? Not protect them, maybe more just buffer them from that.
Well, if your kids are an indication of anything, you always hear the stereotypes about pastors' kids. I'm saying, I think you did pretty well there.
Thanks, man. So, appreciate that.
So what kind of support did you receive as the pastor during this time?
I mean, there's different types of support, right? I think another thing that is absolutely crucial for a church planner is you better have a team of, first and foremost, intercessors. If you don't have a team of intercessors out the gate, you are already setting yourself up for failure. And you can't underestimate that enough. And so we had a team. We still have the same team of people that are our intercessors. And we actually are, you know, constantly building on that team because, again, you can never have enough. So a team of intercessors and prayer warriors that can go before you and on behalf of you and your church and family. So that's first and foremost. Secondly, you need to have relational support, right? So hope has been crucial in that. Again, my wife and I agreed we wouldn't have done this if we didn't have such a great support system through Hope. They were our strategic partner, you know, from a launch team standpoint and a resource standpoint, but also just the relationship with Pastor Bill and the other pastors on staff was absolutely crucial. They're still close friends of ours today. You know, Bill, I would say, is, you know, the greatest pastor mentor that I've ever had. And, you know, that's, it's a rare thing to have that as a pastor, is somebody who believes in you and supports you and encourages you in that. And then not to mention just peer support. You know, your congregation isn't going to be your counselor. you have to have other pastors who are in the thick of it, who know what you're talking about, what you're going through, who are kind of like that safe space to just resonate with each other and share burdens together, you know, and encourage each other in that. And I have that in a few different guys that we meet regularly, whether that's Zoom or just a phone call, FaceTime, whatever. So I think that's, you know, more of the emotional and spiritual support side of it. Of course, you know, again, going back to it, there's many ways to church plant. If you're going to just, you know, let's say, you know, grab a couple people or 10 people and meet in the house, that's great. That's a great model, and you can do that for a time, you know, and that's, you know, low, you know, you're talking about a minimal amount of resources needed to do that. But there's other methods of church planning too. Like with our method, we obviously needed capital and resources to do it, you know, and so you have to learn how to get good at fundraising. You know, that's not necessarily a strength of mine. So that was a new muscle I had to flex when I started the church plant process. My wife, you know, cringed at the thought of having to fundraise and raise support and resources. But we did it, you know, and because I believed in what we were doing, you know, I was able to confidently do that with conviction. So there's no way around it. You need resources to do that. Yeah. And that's just the world we live in right now.
Before we close out here, one thing is just wanted to point out your ministry. And so if anyone has wants to check out what Michael is doing with The Dwelling Church, you can go to thedwellingnv.org. You can find messages there. You can find out events, what the church's got going on, and you can support his ministry through there as well. So thedwellingnv.org, be sure to check that out. But before we go, I just have one last question, and it's, you know, we talked about this being an unchurched area, and we have a lot of families. It's a different mix. You have obviously some of the issues with the prostitution and the gambling that causes, but then, like you mentioned, there's a lot of very family-oriented spots here in the area. What would you say or tell someone who is in the community who hasn't thought about church or Jesus at all?
What would I tell them? Yeah. I would say, just come check it out. Try it out. You know, worst case scenario is you come check it out and you realize it's not for you. But our church, you know, our heart is to create space for people to belong, you know, and how do we unite even in the midst of our differences and the diversity that is around us, whether that's upbringing or, you know, personality or, you know, belief systems. But for us, yeah, it's about creating space for people to belong. And I think what you would find is we don't treat ourselves that seriously when we're, you know, hanging out and connecting as a church. We treat Jesus very seriously, and our faith very seriously in our church, but not ourselves personally, you know, and we want people to come as they are. We're not a church that wants or feels like people have to prop themselves up a certain way, you know, or present themselves, put on a facade and until they leave and then they can take it off and then be them their real selves. And so we try to create opportunity for that because you can say that as a church, but you have to demonstrate it and create space for that culture to really play out. And I think because we do a lot of things that are community oriented, you know, young family oriented, we all know that if you got young families, there is no way around the fact that you're going to see, you know, messy situations. You're going to see kids that are misbehaving, that are, you know, throwing fits or giving tantrums or whatever. And we want parents to come and families to come and feel comfortable, even if that's happening, because we think that, you know, Jesus welcomed the kids. And so we want to welcome them too. And hopefully with that mindset, people will maybe be disarmed by that and let their walls down. And so I would just say, come and check it out. You know, if anything, just come and try it and see what happens, and you might be surprised.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us here on His People. Before we take off, if somebody wants to know more information about your church and what you're doing, what would you want to tell them?
Yeah, like you said, just go to our website, thedwellingnv.org. You can also, you know, find our social media on our website that we're posting stuff all the time.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Michael Liebernecht, pastor of The Dwelling Church in Carson City. Go to thedwellingnv.org. On tomorrow's program, it's Duo Dickinson on the discovery of beauty with religious architecture.
Everybody tries to put some label on design, or they did up until the last touch of the internet, about whether it's classical or modern or traditional or whatever. They try to sort of make it into a style, and the style is all baloney, because the truth is it's whether or not you find it reaches to something you don't control yourself. And that's the beauty thing, which is a nightmare of illegitimacy and excusing ignorance. I just try to make beauty, says the designer. You don't make beauty, you discover beauty. So I'm sorry, you didn't do that. That was already done. You just found it.
That's tomorrow at the same time, right here on His People. Thanks for listening.